This is Piedmont Arts. I'm David Borax. The historic Carolina Theater in Uptown Charlotte will have a grand reopening at the end of this month after a decade of planning and construction. The $80 million project was led by the Foundation for the Carolinas, which bought the theater from Mecklenburg County for a dollar in 2013. The foundation not only restored the 1920s theater to its former glory, but also updated it.
The Carolina Theater has a history of being kind of right there at the top technology. And then we've just basically continued that trend and added some of the best technology we'd have in Charlotte.
That's Executive Director Sean Seifert. On this week's Piedmont Arts, he and Programming Director Doug Young take us inside the Carolina Theater and talk about the renovation and what we'll be seeing in the weeks and years ahead. Also this week, two arts groups in the region are making some unwanted headlines. Later on, I'll speak with Christina Bowling of the Charlotte Ledger newsletter about her reporting on Opera Carolina's management shakeup and legal issues. And I'll have a report about the Eastern Music Festival's surprising decision to cancel the 2025 summer season amid a contract dispute with its unionized faculty and musicians. That's all coming up on the Piedmont Arts Podcast from WDAV. The Carolina Theater is a gem of Charlotte history. It opened on North Tryon Street uptown in 1927 with a screening of the silent film A Kiss in a Taxi. For more than 50 years, it hosted vaudeville shows, films, theatrical productions, and live music, including Elvis Presley in 1956. It fell into disrepair and closed in 1978 after a screening of a Bruce Lee martial arts flick. For years, a community group called the Carolina Theater Preservation Society worked to build support for restoring it. Finally, in 2013, Mecklenburg County turned it over to the Foundation for the Carolinas. The foundation, which manages money for institutions and wealthy families, set out to raise money. Now, opening day is here. Among the first events will be a ribbon cutting, followed by a public open house on Monday, March 24th at 3 p.m. A March 28th gala for the Charlotte Symphony, which played its first concert at the theater way back in 1932. It features renowned soprano Renee Fleming with the symphony. March 29th is the grand opening, with a reception and Mark O'Connor's Beethoven and Bluegrass. That features Charlotte fiddlers Mark and Maggie O'Connor and the Vega Quartet. And the local group Music with Friends has announced that it's moving its popular series to the Carolina Theater, beginning in May with Grammy Award-winning composer and musician David Foster and actress-singer Catherine McPhee. Programming Director Douglas Young says the Carolina Theater's goal is to offer a mix of programming.
We'll certainly bring in some nationally and internationally recognized artists that people are already familiar with, but we'll also bring in names that people haven't discovered yet. And we'll also try to provide a stage for some of the great talent that's already connected to this region. So we'll have performances with concerts and speakers and comedy, but we'll also have town halls and conversations and social gatherings, as well as films on the big screen.
With the theater's long-anticipated completion, Piedmont Arts went for a tour the other day. Executive Director Sean Seifert led the way. We started in a spacious new lobby surrounded by walls of glass panels looking out on North Tryon Street.
This is the lobby. This is where the old buildings used to be on either side of the main entrance. So as you know, most old theaters had the long hallway, and they didn't put the theater at the street. They put it back behind so they could use the space for, you know, stores and stuff like that. So what you see here, we've moved the marquee back inside the building, inside our lobby. One is to protect it. One is to kind of create a history portal that takes us back in time as we go into the theater. Above the marquee, you can see that there's old stone. That old stone is the original 1927 facade from the street right here at the sidewalk. It's the original copper roof and everything, so that was all stored and then put back in place when we did reconstruction.
The renovation here has created this new lobby.
Yeah, so this lobby is really cool because it has point-supported glass, which is a really unique glass. It's supported by steel cables, so there's no steel structures like you would have in a normal building like this. What that allows is you don't have any obstructions when you're outside on the street, walking on the sidewalk or whatever. You don't have any obstructions looking in to see the facade and the marquee. And then also you can kind of, it's really open and you can see the artwork on the ceiling. We have a special installation done by Queen's Table. This art installation on the ceiling, it's basically a constellation of lights, which is really, really cool. We're so happy to have them.
As we head toward the theater itself, Seifert talks about the Carolina Theater's history of innovation.
As we come underneath the marquee, we're coming through the history portal. On the left side, we will have a glass case that has old posters, any other memorabilia we can find. And on the right is a nine screen TV video wall that allow us to do video content. And we can recognize donors, recognize the Carolina Theater Historical Society, tell you what shows are coming up. We can do all kinds of neat stuff on the video wall. One thing that's unique about the theater is that it's a very high-tech theater. Even though it's an old theater and it's a restoration, we've taken great pains to integrate technology throughout the theater. One of the unique things about the Carolina Theater is all throughout its history, starting in the 30s, it added audio, because it was just a silent theater at the beginning. It added audio. And then from there, every 15, 20 years, they would step up to the newest, latest technology. So the Carolina Theater has a history of being kind of right there at the top technology. And then we've just basically continued that trend and added some of the best technology we'd have in Charlotte in this theater. So it's pretty cool. So as we walk through the history portal, we come into the orchestra area. This is the lower level seating area. And in here, we've replaced all the seats. Just about everything's been replaced. The plaster work's been redone. A lot of the plaster work had fallen down. The theater had originally closed in 1978. And from 1978 until 2018, that 40 years, nothing happened in the theater as far as restoration or any type of work that would preserve it. So all your plaster, your paint, all of those types of things really degraded in those 40 years with no heating, cooling, leaky roofs, that whole thing. Once we got in here in 2018, we then had to deal with, of course, asbestos, lead paint, those types of things. So we had to remediate all that before we could even start building back. And all the plaster work and everything here is done exactly the way it was back in 1927. We didn't cut any corners and just use pieces of plastic. It's actual plaster installed the way it was back in 1927.
Can you point to something here that you're talking about and give us the detail on that?
Sure. So on the ceiling, we have these coffered beams that are all plaster, that have an ornate painting on them. All that's been recreated because most of it had fallen down. Along the walls, we've got some scallop panels that create some additional detail. Once we go up to the balcony, then you'll see all the really cool plaster work. It is absolutely amazing what we've done here.
Next, we walk up a sweeping carpeted staircase.
It's pretty exciting to go up these old stairs here to the balcony, looking down at the stage from overhead.
So currently, it's a little hard to see in here. We've got most of the lights off. So we've got a crew in here working on the lights, aiming them and getting them all commissioned and ready to go. As you're in the balcony here, you'll notice we have some murals on the wall. These are reproductions of the original murals that were painted on plaster. These murals were hand-painted like one-third the size. They were scanned at high resolution and then printed on a special fabric with sound-deadening panels behind it. So that increases the acoustic capabilities of the theater.
And how did you know what to put back in there?
It was a challenge to figure out what was here because there's very, very few pictures of the theater inside or out that we have. We only have maybe a handful. What they did is the artists that came in to do this, they looked at other theaters built by the same builder, the same theater developer also, and in the same time frame, and tried to piece it together best they could based on all the information we had. And so they hand-sculpted a lot of this plaster work to what they thought, and then they molded it, reproduced it, and then that's what we have here today. What else?
Just I think while you're here, you may want to just go all the way up to the top.
Probably where I'll be sitting. Douglas Young suggests we keep climbing to the theater's highest level, way above the stage.
Who knew you could walk all the way up here?
Yeah, isn't this great?
Yeah.
So what we've learned as we've restored this and put all the seats in and actually spent some time in here is there is not a bad seat in the house. And some of the best seats are here in the balcony, which you don't normally think that's the case. But in this particular case, these are the best seats.
I definitely stand corrected on my comment. This is a great seat.
Yeah.
Young compares the Carolina Theater's upper-level view to the nearby McGlowan Theater, which is a block away on North Tryon Street. It's actually closed right now during another big construction project.
So I think for many people, the McGlowan Theater, which had 730 seats, was one of the most beloved venues in the city. So having this space come online, I think a lot of people will see some similarities to that as well. We're at 906 seats here. But just like the McGlowan,
the seats at the very top of the house have that great perspective of the entire venue, and the sound carries amazingly in here.
Finally, we go back down to the main theater level, the orchestra, where Seifert picks up the tour.
Yeah, so the stage is pretty cool. We had to completely rebuild the stage to make it structurally sound. We've got a motorized pit lift, which allows us to change the front part of the stage level. The other thing we've done is we have all of our rigging systems are all touchscreen computer controlled, so we don't use the old sandbags or ropes or anything like that. It's all full technology. It also reduces our operating costs because we don't need as many employees to put on a show because we have presets and motorized systems and stuff like that. The other thing that's unique is we have a full sound system that can support a full concert. We don't need to rent equipment. We've got everything we need to put on just about any type of show. We also have the ability to do a full 4K movie with full surround sound, just like a good AMC theater does. So we can do blockbuster movies at full volume, just like you would be expecting.
What other features does the theater have, and how might it be used in the future?
With the lobby being so big, and it's connected to the Foundation for the Carolinas Gallery, that allows us to open up both spaces and use both spaces for any type of events. We also have a full concession stand. You know, we will serve everything you can imagine that a theater should have, from popcorn and your beer, wine, and alcohol to, we're not sure what the full menu will be, but we're going to do some interesting things, interesting movie snacks and stuff like that. It should be pretty cool. We also have a bar in the basement. It's called the 100 Club Lounge. That'll handle about 100, 125 people, and that will be a concession stand at times or a bar for cocktails and hors d'oeuvres before the show, after the show, those types of things. Artist meet and greets would be happening there. And those spaces are available for rent for corporate or private groups. An interesting thing is the way we design the seats on the lower level up to the stage is the center three seats can come out, and it creates an aisle. That aisle can be used for weddings, or it could be used, like if we want to put some scaffolding in there and raise that area, we could do fashion shows or stuff like that.
What does it mean to finally have this project come to fruition after so long?
Well, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, even us at the foundation, we were to the point, well, is it ever going to get done, right? I mean, we're even questioning it too because of all the setbacks. But no, as you see it and you come over here and you see what was created by everybody, it is absolutely amazing. And it's so impressive. And it impresses us every day. And we're so proud to show it off. And we can't wait to get the doors open and get everybody in here because it is going to be amazing.
Why did the Foundation for the Carolinas do this?
I think Michael Marsicano, the CEO of the foundation at the time, partly because our headquarters is located next to it and adjoins it, and we're connected to it. That was one. The other is, you know, there was a lot of people with the Carolina Theater Historic Preservation Society that really kind of kept this thing going over the years, and that caught Michael's attention too, and they started working together. And through that process, it also became apparent that the Foundation for the Carolinas was really the only entity that could probably pull this off the way it turned out. And then we have to thank, you know, our donors. You know, we've raised close to $80 million, and it's all donations. And they made this thing happen.
At one point, there was a proposal for a hotel on top of this. Where do those plans stand?
Yeah, so the building, the lobby that we were in the structure that we're in, that is designed to support a 32-story hotel, or actually 28 stories on top of what we've got. That still could happen. It's not a development by us. It's a development by a third-party developer, and they have a couple more years to decide whether they want to build or not, but that's up to them, and we're not sure. You know, it may happen, it may not. Either way, we're happy with that.
Douglas, what does it mean to you to now be involved in this effort?
To me, I'm very excited. I moved to Charlotte in 1996 with my wife, and the theater had been closed for about 18 years at that point. And even then, we heard the stories about this space, even more so for me personally. My wife and I got married in 1996 on the stage of the Carolina Theater in Greensboro. So I can understand why people get excited about this space. And the stories that we keep hearing about how this space changed their lives over the years. This space played The Sound of Music, and that may not seem like a big deal now, but in 1964 and 1965, over 400,000 people saw that show here, including people who came here because the theater had been desegregated by that time. They came here just to see that show in this space. And one of the cool things about this space is this is not only Charlotte's newest venue, but its oldest venue. So we do have a lot of history attached to the building, but it's also like a startup because it sat here for so long without any activity. So everyone from audience to volunteers to staff, they all have an opportunity to be a part of writing what this story is.
Well, Douglas and Sean, thanks so much for the tour, and thanks for telling us about what's going on here, and good luck.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Sean Seifert is executive director, and Douglas Young is programming director of the newly renovated Carolina Theater in Uptown Charlotte. It opens in the coming weeks with a series of events, including a March 28th Charlotte Symphony Concert with soprano Renee Fleming, and a March 29th grand opening featuring Charlotte-based fiddlers Mark and Maggie O'Connor. You can find out more at carolinatheaterclt.org. And now, to close out this week's Piedmont Arts, some behind-the-scenes news at two local arts groups. Charlotte's Opera Carolina is in turmoil. The Charlotte Ledger newsletter reported last week that the longtime artistic director James Mina is out, the production director has been fired, and there's a legal battle underway. The Ledger's Christina Bowling is with us now to help sort this out. Hello, Christina.
Hi, David.
So, Christina, what is going on with the opera? Can you give us a little background to how this turmoil began?
Sure. So back in this past summer, the opera hired a new executive director. Her name is Shantae Williams. And as it turns out, in the last few months and few weeks, there have been a lot of changes that have occurred in the leadership of Opera Carolina. Namely, James Mina, who has been the general director and the principal conductor since 2000, he disappeared from the website, and there was an announcement on their social media that a new artistic director is going to be taking his place. It's a little bit mysterious. Folks aren't really sure of why the change has happened.
James Mina is not the only one to depart.
That's right. So also the opera's production director, a guy named Michael Bumgarten, he's been there for about 20 years. So Michael was terminated. Shantae Williams sent him an email and terminated his job back in November, saying that it was because of a change in direction and financial considerations as well. He has filed a lawsuit. He filed a lawsuit the next month against Opera Carolina and against Shantae Williams, saying that he was fired without cause and, breach of contract lawsuit. In her response, Shantae Williams claims that he defamed her. And so it's a rather interesting lawsuit that's playing out right now in the court system.
So there's some discussion here about possible financial issues with the opera. What do you know about that?
Sure. So when you look at the opera's, tax records and their finances going back, they definitely saw a dip during COVID, like all arts organizations did, and they've been kind of crawling back. One thing that's come up, when you read the lawsuits and the filings related to the lawsuit, you see some items mentioned about, finances being a reason for a show being postponed that was supposed to be coming to production this spring. And you see Shantae Williams telling Michael Bumgarten that, finances played a role in not being able to retain him. When asked about the financial health of Opera Carolina right now, she didn't really go into any specifics. She just said that she's working toward, the financial health and stability of Opera Carolina. So it's not really clear, as of right now, where things stand financially, but certainly some questions are there.
So it sounds like Opera Carolina is shrinking right now. What do we know about that? And what does that mean for the future of the organization?
Yeah, we don't really know what the plans are in terms of backfilling Michael Bumgarten's production director job. There hasn't really been any announcement about that. The man who was named to replace James Mina as artistic director is a man who has been on staff at Opera Carolina for the last few years. His name is Claudio Ferri Vignotti. And it's not clear, whether that the position that he formerly held will be backfilled. So I did ask how many people are currently on staff at Opera Carolina and how that compares with, previous years and if there's been a decline. And I haven't been able to get an answer about that from Shantae Williams.
So I believe there's one more show for this year, right?
That's right. So they have La Boheme. That's going to be at the Belk Theater in April. James Mina will be conducting that show. And it's not clear after that show who will be the conductor for Opera Carolina.
Well, it sounds like this is a story we'll be watching for a while. If people want to read your full story, where can they find it?
Sure. They can go to thecharlotteledger.com. So www.thecharlotteledger.com. And they can check it out there.
Thanks so much, Christina.
Thanks for having me, David.
Christina Bowling is the managing editor at the Charlotte Ledger Newsletter. And in other arts news this week, the Eastern Music Festival in Greensboro says it's canceling its 2025 summer season, which had been scheduled to run from late June to early August. Leaders say they've been unable to reach a contract agreement with the festival's faculty, who are represented by Local 342 of the American Federation of Musicians. In a statement last week, the union says it's outraged at the cancellation. It says the move violates federal law, which requires employers to maintain the status quo during contract negotiations. The union says it filed an unfair labor practices charge against the festival with the National Labor Relations Board. The five-week festival for high school and college students has run continuously since 1962, except during the coronavirus pandemic. Based at Guilford College, it's educated more than 10,000 students from 40 countries over the years. Its professional faculty also offer public concerts around the Greensboro area. Festival leaders say they've met more than 20 times with the union. They say they're planning to bring the festival back in 2026. The more than 60 faculty members unionized in 2023. In messages on social media, they say they're concerned about planned job cuts, workload, wages, and unpaid year-round work requirements. That's it for Piedmont Arts this week. You can subscribe and hear past episodes at wdav.org/subscribe. I'm David Borax.